The world around us is changing rapidly. Fundraisers and nonprofit marketers like you have to be flexible and innovative to continue to overcome the challenges you face. We're Pursuant, and we're here to provide you with the tools, insights, and strategies you need to get you where you want to go. You're tuned in to the Pursuant Listening Experience. Okay, we're rolling. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Pursuant Go Beyond podcast. I'm Leah Davenport, and I serve in our marketing team here at Pursuant. The past few months, like the rest of the world, we have been exploring how the COVID-19 pandemic and subsequent economic downturn are affecting philanthropy on the ground. In this episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Reggie Rivers, president of the Gala team, and Ryan Carpenter, director of market solutions here at Pursuant, to discuss best practices for how organizations can leverage virtual events to engage their donors. We sat down with Reggie a few months ago as his company was quickly shifting their business to serve nonprofits virtually, and we wanted to check in with him now that we're several months down the road and they're starting to see some results and see some ways that nonprofits are really being nimble at this time. So Reggie, Ryan, welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you, Leah.
Yeah, thanks, Leah. Glad to take part.
So Reggie, let's start with you. I'd love to kind of go back to March, April, when everything was kind of coming down around our ears with COVID-19 and everybody was trying to scramble and figure out what to do. Could you tell us kind of the story of how your company pivoted to doing virtual events and, you know, what kind of the subsequent learnings have been from that?
Sure. On March 12th is when we discovered that we were losing our first client to COVID. That we had an event scheduled for Friday, March 13th, and one for Saturday, March 14th. And so on the 12th, both of those events went away, and it was devastating for those nonprofits. They didn't have time to pivot. They didn't have time to do anything other than just cancel. And then we looked ahead at our calendar, and it was like, well, next weekend we have three events, and the weekend after that we have three events, and the weekend after that we have six events. What are all those clients going to do? And so we immediately pivoted to virtual. We had never done a virtual gala before. We had never even thought about doing a virtual gala, but we realized that we had to find some kind of solution for our charity partners to be able to raise the money they needed. So we kind of dove in and tried to figure out how could we do a virtual gala using Zoom, using Facebook Live. And as we learned lessons, we started publishing blogs about what we were learning. And so we'd learn something on Wednesday, publish it on Thursday, learn something on Saturday, publish it on Monday. And within a month, we did our first virtual gala. It went really well. The next week, we did two more virtual galas. They went great. So now we've done about 15 virtual galas. We have a total of 43 on our calendar for 2020. And we've really just kind of figured out how to do it. And we've been pleasantly surprised to discover that it actually works, that people do attend and that you do raise money and it is effective.
That's really great to hear that you were able to make that shift so quickly. And so kind of before I ask another follow-up question to you, Reggie, Ryan, I'd love to kind of get a little bit of insight from you on Reggie's answer and kind of what you've seen. Like, how are other nonprofits that you work with across the industry engaging major supporters at this time? And the reason I ask about major donors or major supporters is because a lot of times that is the audience that we are looking to engage at events and galas. And so, you know, when all of a sudden you're used to meeting in person and structuring things in a certain way when you're in a gala environment, how does that change when you go to a virtual format?
Yeah, sure, Leah. I mean, let me just first say that what we found certainly echoes what Reggie has just informed us on. And here at Pursuant, we've had the opportunity over the past several months to get together for ongoing workshops with over 50 of our clients' major gifts teams. And, you know, it's been a great opportunity to collaborate amongst all of these clients and really share best practices. And so when we started, one of the things that we were hypothesizing on is, based on all the data we knew about major gifts and, you know, what was effective, was that meaningful doesn't have to always be face-to-face. And we felt that there was an opportunity to expand the people that you reached out to through virtual Zoom meetings or simply phone calls, because the likelihood of getting people to agree to those is going to be higher than trying to get people to attend a physical event or gala or simply a meeting just because of people's schedules and, you know, where they're at the time physically. And this is both pre and post pandemic. And the outcomes over the past few months have been really positive. We've seen a number of major gift shops pivot to Zoom events, galas, such as the ones that Reggie's spoken about and will expand upon, but even just meetings in general. And virtual doesn't mean less meaningful. If you have a reason to connect with somebody, you don't have to necessarily be face-to-face. You can connect with them through a Zoom call or even a telephone call, and we're finding the outcomes to be similar to the outcomes of what you had last year where people were scheduling coffee together at the local coffee shop. And so we're finding that this is an opportunity really to engage with more of your constituents, and it's not lessening the meaningful impact of those engagements.
Ryan, if I could piggyback on that, that's exactly what we're seeing too, is that the major gifts, the reasons that people give, the mid-majors, are very complex. It's not, I mean, of course they like the face-to-face interaction, and of course you have to nurture these donors and bring them along. But during this time of crisis, what we've seen is that they're stepping up and saying, how can we help you? Like, we support you for a wide variety of reasons. And right now we see that you have a need that is greater than ever before. How can we help you? And they're really the ones who are driving the success of these virtual galas.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that, Reggie. And another point to make upon that is making an ask or soliciting, it's not always contingent upon doing so face-to-face. In fact, looking back at all the historical data from over 50 of our clients, what we're finding when you were looking at qualification, cultivation, solicitation, and stewardship is that to solicit, it's not necessarily a best practice to do so in person. You really have to meet in person or face-to-face. It's really critical at that initial stage. So for a number of your major donors that are in your portfolio, frankly, pre or post pandemic, it's not critical that you meet face to face to make that ask. And so what you're saying, I absolutely agree with, is that these people, they're altruistic, they're philanthropic, they want to support your cause. It's not going to matter if they do so face to face. And on top of that, you know, now and going forward, you may want to consider, when is it important to meet face-to-face? It's not always about putting a proposal in somebody's lap and asking them to make the gift there. It may be more important to meet face-to-face, or in this current time of crisis, do so in a Zoom call earlier on in the relationship. Later in that relationship, it's, you know, you can certainly be just as effective picking up the phone and talking with them or sending them a proposal in the mail or through email.
I love some of the words and phrases that you guys have been using around making virtual events meaningful, because something that you shared with me and Ryan, Reggie, on kind of a prep call that we had for this conversation was that something that's really unique and interesting about virtual events is the fact that you actually can invite such a broader list of people to attend the event. And so there's sort of these interesting ways that you shared with us that you can make virtual events meaningful, and you can adapt the format of it while also being able to maybe pull back the curtain a little bit for supporters at your organization that might not normally get to participate in that kind of event or wouldn't be invited to participate. So is there anything in that you would like to expand upon?
Sure. I think one of the things that we started to realize almost immediately is that the traditional event in a ballroom is a private invitation only situation. And most of the people who support you are excluded from that opportunity. It costs too much to attend. They're not on your invite list for whatever reason. And so you get 500 people together over and over again, but it's rarely, you have a donor base that is much broader than that. And so now in the virtual environment, most of the groups that we're working with, they're not charging anything for the virtual gala. And we don't know if that's a best practice or not yet. It's too early in the game. So many of the spring events had COVID sprung on them. And so they had already sold all their tickets, already sold all their sponsorships. So it wasn't a question of, should we sell tickets? Now the fall events are having this dilemma. Do we charge admission to attend our virtual gala, or do we just make it available to everyone? And right now, it's not quite a best practice, but it's our best recommendation is, yeah, open it up as widely as you can, because we've seen through, like, using Facebook Live, an organization that might have expected to have 200 or 300 people view their event end up with 1,500 to 2,000 people who view their event, that they discover that there's a lot of people who are interested in the work that they do, might be interested in supporting the work that they do, but they've never been invited to the annual gala. They don't even know what it's all about. And so taking this virtual gala opportunity, and then don't try to just squeeze your live event into a virtual event. Like say, hey, here's all the elements that we have in our live event. How do we shrink them down and shove them into this new virtual environment? I think you have to look at the virtual landscape and think about what opportunities it presents to you that your normal in-person event doesn't, and what's the best way to use that space and time. And just a couple of examples of that is, we think your virtual event has to be much shorter than your live event. We recommend around 45 minutes. We think that your virtual event should make much greater use of video than even in your live event. Most live events have some video elements, but to have some pre-recorded videos that really share your mission, that are well-edited, have great music, have great tonality to them, convey a lot of emotion, that's going to be a big impact on your virtual gala. And so I think looking at virtual galas as a new opportunity, rather than just trying to squeeze your in-person event into this new platform, I think is going to be the key.
Really great insights there. I really love what you said about making sure that the message fits the medium, because you're right, in a live event, you have all the kind of dead air time when people are getting up, they're getting food, they're making small talk, like all of those things are happening. But some of those things are, I think, particularly maybe the networking that might happen to those things, I think those are things that people still want to do and they look forward to. And so are there ways that you can still kind of build in more of that like peer-to-peer networking exclusivity into some of these virtual events that you had in the face-to-face world?
I think that there are ways to do that, but probably not in a virtual gala. I think that there can be virtual donor stewardship events that you can host that are more of a traditional Zoom call where you can break people up into breakout rooms and do things like that. But what we have seen is that through the chat for your virtual gala, you need to have somebody you call a chat promoter. And it's their job when people join in to kind of type in, hey, Ryan, great to see you. Hey, Leah, so glad you could join us. And to try to encourage the chat. And what we see is through the chat messages, people are giving shout outs to each other, to the charity. And that's part of that socializing that they would get in a ballroom.
Hey there, if you're enjoying this episode, feel free to head over to Pursuant.com/podcast resources to grab our latest free fundraising resources. We update the page weekly, so be sure to check back regularly to get free fundraising ebooks, webinars, and other resources designed with fundraisers like you in mind.
Ryan, I'd love to go back to you when it comes to this question of data. You kind of brought it up earlier in our conversation, but what are some ways that you can leverage your database and insights about the donors that you're inviting to these events to really maximize impact before, in terms of making sure that you've got the right people in the room, and then afterwards to extend kind of the impact of that event?
Sure. This is one of my favorite topics to talk about, leveraging data. And let me just start by saying, prior to virtual events, prior to the pandemic, you were still leveraging data, right? Before events we held, I remember when I was at Year Up, we would hold small salon style events. We always wanted to understand who are the right people to invite, or if it was a larger event, like a golf event, of those people that were inviting, who are the ones that I had to make sure I was going to go up and have a conversation with. So now that we're virtual, to Reggie's point, you are expanding the universe of who you can invite, rightfully so. However, you still want to understand who is the key audience. And that goes beyond simply who gives X amount of dollars, right? You want to understand not only who is supporting you in a meaningful way now, but who has the highest levels of affinity. Understand what goes on beyond your database. So who does have capacity, who is supporting similar causes, that means they have a greater share of wallet. And those people, what do they care about? What do they look like? What's their makeup? Because you want to make sure if you invite 1,500 people, who are the key 200 or so that you want to speak to, because you want to resonate your message with them. They are the most valuable donors and non-donors that you are going to invite. And you want to make sure you're gathering their intention and their desire to support you. And so that's what goes on before the event. Post-event's equally important. You want to understand who attended, who gave to you, who's new to your organization, similar to an in-person gala or event, because you want to know, understand what the opportunity is for your organization with these individuals going forward. And you want to understand, you know, what's the likelihood of them supporting you in the future? What's the likelihood of them supporting you at a greater level? What do they actually care about? So you can make sure you're messaging the right things to them to gather their interest and build a stronger relationship. And again, that goes beyond what you have on your database. You really have to blend prospect research as well as just general donor insights that you can do through a number of different solutions out there.
We've discovered that that same thing is very true, that there's a desire from the nonprofits. They want to kind of speak to everybody. They want to say, well, whether you can give $10,000 or $10, we want to communicate with you. And I think that that is, there's nothing wrong with that idea, except that you can't effectively communicate with that broader range. And so you really have to aim at your target demographic. Like, who is it that you're really communicating to? And what is the level of support that you're really looking for? And let's say that was $1,000. It's like the midpoint of what it is you're really looking for and you're trying to communicate. Well, people who can contribute less than that, you're not excluding them. You're still telling them about the mission. You're still exciting them, but they would just need to team up to, you know, two people at $500 still gets you $1,000, 10 people at $100, you know, 20 people at $50, that when you're communicating, and I, you know, this sounds a little bit weird that I'm, it's not like you're really saying, hey, I'm talking to you, $1,000 donor, but yeah, you kind of are. And when you're communicating in a way that helps people understand, they can team up, they can be part of the team that helps to meet that mission, but you're not talking all the way down to the $10 to say, hey, even $10 would do this or that. I don't think you can spend your time that way.
Yeah, again, and I think that's, you want to be as inclusive as possible, but you want to be targeting your message to the right donors at that event. And you want to make sure if you're looking for support at $1,000 or greater, what is that message going to do to resonate with those people that can and will do that? And, you know, that's what's important, because yes, the people that aren't able or not interested in supporting at $1,000, they may be able to collaborate with others. I mean, that's great, but we want to make sure the people that can support you at a meaningful level, if this is a gala type event, that your message is going to resonate with them. So I completely agree.
Reggie, I've got a few more quick questions, but before I go into kind of our sort of wrap up of this discussion, I'd love to know about this at-home guide that you are going to be making available to nonprofits who are interested in maybe doing a little bit more of a kind of DIY virtual gala. Can you tell me some more about that?
Sure. We've gotten calls from all over the country from organizations that are like, hey, you guys are the virtual gala team. Can you tell us how to do a virtual gala? And unfortunately, we couldn't. We were like we were in a boat in a choppy sea going across a channel. It's like, we basically know how to sail across this channel and solve the problems, but we don't actually have it written down anywhere. And we can't teach another captain how to do it. But we got so many inquiries, we decided to do that. And so we've created what we're calling a virtual gala at home step-by-step guide. And it's available now on our website at virtualgalateam.com. But basically, if you're a nonprofit, you have experience, you have resources available to you, you have staff and volunteers, you could take this course and put on your own virtual gala, and you don't have to bump into some of the challenges and lessons that we learned along the way. And so this is just a way for us to solve that need for so many people who are contacting us saying, can you just tell us how to do it? Well, now we can.
Awesome. Yeah. We will definitely be linking to that guide in the show notes of this episode. And also another quick little ad I'd love to throw out for people is next Tuesday. So probably this episode will be releasing on the day. So depending on whenever you are listening to this, we will be shortly launching this webinar, or it will be just afterwards. But Tuesday, July 28th, we're going to be teaming up with Reggie and Ryan again to kind of expand on some of these topics in a webinar on virtual events. And so we invite you to check that out or check out the recording again, depending on when you're hearing this episode. And another quick event that we've got coming up is the Pursuant Giving Outlook, and that is on Tuesday, August 11th. And that is going to be kind of our look at the previous trends in fundraising and how they are comparing to the current trends that we're seeing in this COVID environment. And we look forward to putting this on every year to really equip nonprofits with just the most recent information that we have at our fingertips to help them make informed decisions with their strategy. So hope to see you there as well. With all that said, Reggie, what is an aha moment or a few aha insights that you have experienced over the past few months of conducting these virtual events?
I think probably the biggest aha moment is that your virtual gala might not need to be on a Friday or Saturday night, that a Monday night or Tuesday night, you know, we're shy away from Monday, but like a Tuesday or a Wednesday night might be a better night for your virtual gala than the traditional Friday or Saturday night. And we discovered this in the spring. Everything was fine. If the event was scheduled on Saturday night, no problem, because the whole country was pretty locked down. Everyone was stuck in their homes. As soon as the economy started to open back up, we started to see that the events that were on Friday and Saturday night had more trouble drawing an audience. They were still raising good money, but they weren't drawing the kind of audience that they wanted. And so now, again, it's not quite a best practice because we don't have enough reps, but a best recommendation is to look at a Tuesday or a Wednesday night and see if that might be a better fit.
That's fascinating. Ryan, any other thoughts on your end that you'd love to share with us?
I think just to double down on the fact that this is still an opportunity to engage with your strongest supporters in a meaningful way, as well as attract new supporters to your organization. As Reggie opened up, you know, in-person galas and events were really targeted on your highest value contributors and supporters to the organization. Whereas now with virtual, you can open up and invite new and donors that aren't supporting at the highest levels, while still keeping that message on point to those that, you know, are going to support in a meaningful way. So it's something to keep in mind. While it does open up things, you have to be a little bit more sophisticated and nuanced with understanding who those people are. So using data is critically important.
Well said. Reggie, as we close out here, what are some ways that the nonprofit's interesting in partnering with you or learning more about how to do virtual events and some of those best recommendations that you've been referencing? How can they get in touch with you?
They can find us at our website at virtualgalateam.com. And so we have a lot of, there's blogs there that offer a lot of information. We have our course there, but also contact information for us. So virtualgalateam.com.
Awesome. And Ryan, how about you?
Yeah, I can be reached at ryan.carpenter@pursuant.com.
Well, thank you both for taking some time out of today to hop on another Zoom call to have this great conversation. And I hope that everybody who is able to listen to this comes away with some really great insights about how they can make the most of this channel. So thank you guys again for joining.
Thanks,
Reggie. Thanks, Leah.